Totally Football Show. Today, nominative non-determinism special, with a manager named Keane who makes players say they'd rather not, to a team with George Weah that has no precedent, to a man named Loris who's not roadworthy, and another who says he must not go to Russia's capital. All of that, plus we gaze agog at the fixtures coming up this weekend in club football, Watford against Man United, Cardiff, Chelsea, and all the rest of that kind of thing in the Totally Football Show. Carolina Lynn's playing us in on this edition of the Totally Football Show with a little bit of a karaoke vibe there. And Dr. Tom Markham, fresh back from Rio de Janeiro, joins us on the show alongside the vocal talents of course, James Horncastle and Brazil's very own adopted son, Jack Lang. Jack, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Dr. Tom.
Morning, James.
Bon?
Tout de bon.
Outstanding. And Ayup, James.
Hi. How are you doing?
Stop. All right, great to have you all in. I just know there's a real Brazilian theme here. Of course, you're fresh from producing the cinematic meisterwerk that is Kaiser, the greatest footballer never to play football, from which that track is lifted, of course, reworking of the Kaiser Chiefs, which there's a double play going on there, I now realise.
Absolutely, and I just said that to Jack before we came on air, that...
Right.
After a few caipirinhas just off the Copacabana, we came up with that logic because obviously in the film there is a big riot in the crowd when Kaiser gets sent off.
Right, in one of my favourite bits of his entire story.
Yeah, so yeah. that's how it came about.
All right. There's literally, Jack, so much to talk about.
I bet there is.
I mean, we've got Premier League coming back this weekend. There really is. I'm not sure how to take your reaction there. But before we even go near club football... There's so much I want to talk about from the wide world of international football. First of all, quick comment, England beat someone. In this case, Switzerland, a Switzerland side who'd just done Iceland 6-0. So, you know, impressive. That was at Leicester on Tuesday. Your thoughts?
I thought the first half was fairly tedious. England quite disappointing. It felt like a return to the meaningless friendlies that the UEFA Nations League has done away with, really. And England's performance, I thought, followed suit. It was just a bit clumsy, a couple of errors in the first half. There was an improvement after the break, but I would say Switzerland were fairly unlucky not to get something, not that it really matters a great deal.
2-2 for Marcus Rashford after none in 26 for Raheem Sterling, whose place he took. Scary numbers. Also from England's group, equally scary numbers. Spain's 6-0 win over Croatia. That's World Cup finalist Croatia to you. Did you see this, James?
I've seen the goals and they're pretty extraordinary. I mean, even the first one was pretty direct, suggestive of a new direction under
right.
Luis Enrique. And that's, you know, Sergio Ramos plays, what, a 40-metre ball out to Carvajal. Wonderful outside of the foot cross for Saúl. But yeah, Marcus Asensio.
Árbitro francés Asensio.
And that wonderful assist laid on by the Croatia defence for Asensio.
Yes, yeah, that just gets better and better, doesn't it?
So worth remembering, didn't play a single minute at the World Cup for Spain.
Mm.
I know, obviously, they've got ridiculous strength in depth, but someone of that talent obviously made a big impact in the two games since. So it's nice, I suppose, when you're changing regime that one of the players you bring in immediately has that impact.
Good, absolutely.
Good news for Luis Enrique.
In other news from the international, Scotland are now just 3 wins away from qualifying for Euro 2020, according to science. Dr. Tom, you don't believe me, but I will tell you that Scotland beat Albania, thanks to Stephen Naismith in particular, and they now will play another game with Albania and Israel home and away. If they get a home win over Israel and avoid defeat in the other games, that would be enough to top the section, which guarantees them a place in the playoffs in March 2020.
Fantastic. Now, I think tournaments miss supporters like the Scottish supporters, so I think they'd be a great addition to any tournament, and it's fantastic to see Alex McLeish doing all right.
Yeah, that Israel team, who will be Scotland's next opponent in the Nations League, beaten in a friendly by Northern Ireland this week, 3-0. Moving along, Portugal were without Cristiano Ronaldo, James, but it didn't matter. They still beat Italy 1-0.
Deservedly so.
Yeah.
Because I think even Donnarumma making a bit of a mistake, and his blushes were spared by Romagnoli making a clearance off the line, he was probably Italy's best player.
Portugal should have had a penalty as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, yeah.
How much trouble are Italy in?
I think in considerable difficulty, made worse by the manager, Roberto Mancini, who doesn't seem to have figured out that this team can be relegated into what, Group B of the Nations League. Just seems to be treating it as a friendly. I mean, going away to the European champions and making 9 changes and fielding the youngest side that Italy have put out in yonks. Not too bright an idea from Bobby Goll.
It's the first time since their World Cup win that they fielded no member of that 2006 champions side. Yeah. A subject we touch on, a theme we touch on, we explore, we revisit in this week's Golazzo. Huh. Now, Turkey produced a stirring comeback to hold Sweden. Alexander Mitrovic grabbed a brace for Serbia in their 2-2 draw with Romania. Did you see his second? You see Mitrovic's second, Jack?
I did, yeah. It did actually take a small clip off a defender's leg when it moved up in the air for him to volley, so I don't think it was as great.
Made the volley all the more difficult.
I think so too.
Okay, yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Okay, that's Mitrovic, who mm-hmm. of course is on fire
yeah.
since his move south from Newcastle. Iceland, meanwhile, not on fire. Mm. Erik Anders Hamren coming in for Heimir Hallgrímsson. And since then, they've lost 2, conceded 9, scored none.
Yeah, teething problems since they got rid of the dentist.
Hey, they've lost that filling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He needs to drill them.
Mm.
Right.
A few too many gaps. Yeah.
Right. They were so good at the World Cup, but now their form is just the molar opposite. That look. Right. Nice, James.
Yeah. Of course, one of the biggest stories of the international week was Ireland. Trouble on the field, trouble off the field. We'll be talking about that after this.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Ireland, after being taken apart by Wales, a 1-1 draw in the friendly with Poland on Tuesday, Dr. Tom, Aidan O'Brien on his debut. Millwall's Aidan O'Brien. So that's nice. But all positive, but overshadowed, of course, by the revelations and increasing concerns over the management approach of O'Neill and Keane, particularly Roy Keane. To quote Miguel Delaney, it's difficult to grasp whatever it is Roy Keane does and why whatever it is he does couldn't be done by someone less prone to explosive arguments. Dr. Tom, this follows, of course, Harry Arter saying, yeah, no, you're right, when Ireland gave him a call-up for the Wales game after an explosive argument with Roy Keane.
Yeah, I think, We know how Keane operates. Nothing ever really ends amicably. I think there have been quite a lot of double standards. I was at an LMA event at the weekend that Mick McCarthy was at, and I spoke to him about the whole situation, and he said that when he was managing Ireland, that he would give Roy Keane an extra 2 days off, that he'd actually only train the night before the game to obviously get... So it's quite ironic, and this hasn't necessarily...
Wasn't the
out.
Whole stick it up your bollocks episode about
exactly.
recovering from injury?
And particularly in Jonathan Walter's situation, that, you know, he's in the twilight of his career. He's a player that's very, very physical. He's obviously had all these knocks, so he can't train every day. And Roy, of all people, should know that. So I think there's quite flawed logic there from Keane's perspective, and Martin O'Neill is left to pick up the pieces.
Right. Well, what is the future then for Roy Keane? Do the results demand anyway a change in the way the team is being run? And is the real problem, stay with me here, the exciting go-getters in charge at the FAI? To get a view from Dublin, let's speak to Dion Fanning, who's the chief sports writer for Joe, amongst his many other incarnations. This Roy Keane business First of all, just give us a bit of perspective. How big a figure is he in the Ireland setup?
As a symbol, he's the biggest figure in the Ireland setup. What he actually does in the Ireland setup, apart from fall out with people, is harder to gauge. But, you know, as a figure in Irish football and as somebody who draws attention to the Irish football team, which I think is the reason he's there as much as anything, there isn't anybody bigger. When Keane does a press conference, people want to go to it. Like, Keane is a connection with the great days of Irish football. He was one of the greatest players Ireland ever produced, and there is nobody else. If you stop anybody in the street today and show them the current Irish football team, they won't, you know, the chances are they'll barely recognise any of them, but they will all recognise Roy Keane. Mm.
That notwithstanding, with the results that have been coming in, and particularly with the current storm, the leaked WhatsApp recording of Stephen Ward discussing his run-ins with John Waters and Harry Arter, how damaging is all that to Keane's position?
I wouldn't be surprised if Keane left the way, you know, these things that have become kind of still surprisingly predictable in Keane's career, you know, these kind of Friday afternoon announcements, like when he left Manchester United, suddenly he has left. I think that could happen with him at Ireland. The management team are under huge pressure after the Wales result and after the hammering Denmark gave them last year. Time is up for both of them. But Roy Keane, I don't know if there is any future in management for Keane. Like, this is the kind of tragic thing. If I'm going to overstate it a little bit, that, you know, a guy who's the same age as Pep Guardiola, and when I covered him an awful lot when he was at Sunderland in his first 2 years, and it looked like something kind of huge was going to happen there. You know, whenever he talked at that stage, when he was a player, whenever he spoke, he was so intelligent. He was fascinating about Manchester United, about Alex Ferguson, about Ireland when he took on the FAI and the facilities. But it kind of turned out as he transitioned into management that what he was fascinating about was essentially talking about himself. The fact that he was at Manchester United meant he and himself and his problems were a huge problem because they were to do with the biggest club in the world. But as he transitioned into management, he didn't have that ability to care about other people and players the way he cared about his own problems. That has been the thing. And now he has kind of regressed into this angry old football man kind of shouting at the clouds. And it's sad because, as I said, he's the same age as Guardiola. He should be a figure of, like, a huge figure in Irish football and in management. But instead, when this job ends, he's not going to go anywhere.
Dr. Tom, yeah, so you were nodding vigorously during that.
Yeah, I think that Dion was speaking an awful lot of sense there. And you look at Wales and Ampadu, for example, who played the other night, who's been playing for Wales since he was 16. He could play for Ghana, he could have played for Ireland, and Wales got in there and capped him very quickly. Ireland have had problems over the
not
years.
Not in a, you know, gangster sense, that would be.
No.
Right.
But players, like, even Kane could have played for Ireland, Rooney could have played for Ireland if they were really on the ball and doing this. But there are three...
Could Harry Kane have played for Ireland?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the three players at the moment that are on the way up that are very talented, Ryan Cassidy at Watford, uh-huh, Troy Parrott at Tottenham, who broke all of Robbie Keane's goal-scoring records on the way up, and Gavin Bazuna, who's gone to Manchester City, the young goalkeeper who was playing for Shamrock Rovers this season at 16. I think these people should be fast-tracked into the squad just to get them used to it.
But I imagine it's a little bit of a vicious circle that it's quite hard to convince players to commit to Ireland in their current state.
Well, that's it. And, you know, you have to get them to buy into it. But I agree with Dion that the management could potentially be getting a little bit stale, but they don't actually have the resources to fire these two guys. So they basically end up with a Slaven Bilic type of situation that you'd be bringing someone back to manage for free. So they're struggling to pay for the stadium as it stands. So that's simply not going to happen.
No. Okay, sorry about that, Ireland fans. Jack, I've got a list of other international excitements. I don't know if you've got things you want to throw in here, but for example, did you see George Hagi's son?
Yanis.
Did you see the goal he scored from the corner.
No.
Against Bosnia-Herzegovina under-21s.
Ah,
lovely. Olympic goal.
Is that what you call it?
South Americans do, yeah.
They call it an Olympic goal.
An Olympic goal.
Why?
No idea.
Probably somebody scored one in the Olympics. No, I mean, I would imagine that's why. Talk to Tom.
The academy that Georgi Hagi runs, it's a team called FC Viteral in Romania. They won the league a couple of years ago. It started off as an underage academy. I think they have nearly 60 of the underage Romanian players are here.
Really?
His son, obviously, he sold to Fiorentina and he came back to Romania, the guy who scored the goal. But yeah, that is an absolute factory of talent.
Wow. Okay. Speaking of offspring, meanwhile, Timothy Weah won his fifth cap for USA, as they beat Mexico 1-0. Much needed boost for them. While 8,331 kilometres away in Monrovia, Timothy's dad, George, played 79 minutes for the Lone Stars in a 2-1 defeat to Nigeria. George, now 51 and by day, is president of Liberia. What did you make of this, Jack?
My favourite thing about this was that it seemed to have surprised everyone involved. So the game was arranged to retire Weah's number 14 shirt. And I'm sure he was expected there, you know, maybe take the opening kickoff or something like that. But
79 minutes.
The way I read the story was that, television coverage started, people at the stadium, on he comes, leading the team up. Fantastic.
No one had told Nigeria that it was a kind of legends game because they fielded a pretty normal side. John Kershaw tweets, please tell me George's cousin played too. Patrick Tarr suggests it wasn't such a... I think there was a certain amount of dissent about this in Liberia, essentially the president.
He got a standing ovation when he came off.
Oh, though. Really? Yeah. Well, according to Patrick Tarr, government business was suspended and workers were invited by email to go to the stadium to watch the game. So a certain amount of Sacha Baron Cohen about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Anything else we missed?
Brazil,
South American stuff.
Brazil, Richarlison. Richarlison making his debut for the Seleção and getting on the score sheet.
Yeah, he was great. He was only a replacement call-up. There's a guy called Pedro from Fluminense who originally was meant to be in the squad. Got injured, Richarlison came in. And yeah, did brilliantly. First goal, curler from outside the area after linking up with Neymar, and then a really instinctive left-footed finish later. Also won a penalty. So yeah, I think he took his chance really well, and I'm sure he'll be involved next time.
Right, I called it his debut. It was his first start. He had actually come on as a sub previously. What a brilliant way to seize that opportunity. Yeah.
Julien Laurens can't understand it, though. Just can't figure it.
Now, Heung-min Son is still out there playing internationals for South Korea. He's never coming back. This time it was against Chile. Did you see what he did to Vidal and Diego Valdez?
Yeah, popped the ball through Valdez's legs. And Valdez, of course, who landed himself in hot water for...
doing
an offensive gesture...
Duke of Edinburgh, yeah.
...with a South Korean fan. So yeah. Nice, skillful revenge.
Yeah, nice one. A lovely little clip, that. Anything else you want to throw in on the international tip before we move on, Dr. Tom or James?
The only thing that I think that's worth mentioning, you talked about Spain and the development and Sol coming through, but Northern Ireland, actually the under-21s beat the Spanish under-21s, which Ooh. Is some achievement given the conveyor belt of talent there is in Spain versus Northern Ireland. So hats off to them.
In other news, remember you were talking about Diego Maradona on Monday's show?
Were we?
You were.
Right, okay.
And you couldn't remember who he had previously signed, you know, a...
I can now.
...kind of managerial job with before this Mexican club. It was in Belarus, Dinamo Brest.
Yes.
...as chairman. And I wonder if he's plotting a career path here on the sex and drugs and rock and roll path. Dinamo Brest.
Yes.
Mexican club in the middle of cartel land.
Right.
Drugs.
Okay.
So who does he sign for next is the question.
Have to be Sampaoli after that, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting shout. Actually, this is Diego Maradona, who's signed for Dorados of Sinaloa, a club that is based, Jack, as you point out, in the heart of the Sinaloa drugs cartel. Maradona, who was coach of Argentina in the 2010 World Cup, he then coached Dubai-based Al Wasl in the UAE Pro League for the 11-12 season. In May 2018, he was announced as the new chairman of Belarusian club Dynamo Brest. I think, though, after being presented by the club, he subsequently was never seen again by them.
Well, you say that, but the chairman of Dynamo Brest made a statement after this Mexican thing and said, well, that was just unexpected news. And he considered Maradona still to be an employee of the club. Okay. I guess maybe it was a loose chairmanship, as you might expect.
Perhaps. Well, do you think this is going to last? He didn't look very well at the World Cup.
Well, he said he regards this new step as salvation, in that it's kind of a way that he's going to rescue himself from temptation. Temptation, of course, has had quite a strong hold on him over his
life. Well, yeah, but, you know, that's the nature of temptation.
For sure.
He just keeps giving in to it.
Yeah. Well, I can resist anything except temptation.
Yeah. He's well medicated.
Hey, also on the international transfers front, we should update you vis-a-vis the John Terry situation. To Spartak Moscow's chagrin, England's brave JT has decided he will not be making the journey, the transfer, for family reasons. Extraordinary little statement that he put out. But Sasha Gurionov pointing out that this leaves Spartak and their coach Massimo Carrera with a real problem. I think they've got 3 days to find a centre-half.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
They can go for Papi Gilabogi.
They can indeed, Jimbo.
Because he's just been released by Sunderland.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Putting people together on the Totally Football Show. Totally Football Show is live in London all together now on Monday, the 24th of September. That's me, James Horncastle, Duncan Alexander and Michael Cox. It's at the Queen Elizabeth Hall on the South Bank. Southbankcentre.co.uk is where you get tickets. Friday, the 5th of October, we're in Manchester. That's with me, James Horncastle, Rory Smith of the New York Times and Daniel Story. Not sure where Daniel Story's of these days, actually. But anyway, that's ctickets, seetickets.com. To get a piece of that. Should be some sweet, sweet talking about football action. Premier League is back this weekend and it kicks off with Spurs against Liverpool. That's up after this.
He lines up to hit it and yes! It's deflected for a corner. That's over 12 corners. Yes! No time to take it though. It's finished 0-0. What a result.
Sorry, our fault. You see, with same-game multibets from Paddy Power, you can combine multiple selections from one match into one bet, and you'll get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold same-game multibet lets you down. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense. Applies to pre-match fourfold same-game multibets on UK and top European leagues. Max free bet £10 per customer per day. Minimum odds. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
James, what's that you've got open on your laptop?
Well, I've been following Mark Wahlberg's sort of daily routine,
okay,
Jimbo. So I was up at 2:30 this morning.
That's gone very viral.
Yeah, yeah. I got my workout in between 3:40 and 5:15 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And right now it's between 11 and 1, so I'm just spending family time with you guys.
No, in a very real sense.
I'm not
sure that, you know, Mark Wahlberg, who's paid to impersonate people for a living, is actually being entirely truthful with this now viral breakdown of his schedule. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of things missing for me from that list, but it's fascinating anyway.
Well,
Dr. Tom's found something interesting. What are you pointing at, Dr. Tom?
Well, I like the way that he said that he played golf from 7:30 a.m. to 8 a.m. So anyone who can do an 18-hole round of golf in half an hour is absolutely
incredible. There is speed golf, of course. Maybe it's that.
I think he's having a laugh myself. Jack?
Well, I think once you've done your daily cryogenic recovery, the golf will naturally come faster to you.
Right. Okay.
His snack also lasts an hour and a half.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's probably like a slab of raw buffalo or something, isn't it? Preparation time is worked into that.
Yeah.
Okay. Wasn't what I was intending to talk about at this point, James.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's all right. My schedule on Saturday, 12:30, very much sees me in front of the TV to catch Spurs meeting another of those teams with perfect records, you know, like last time when they got beaten by Watford.
Yeah.
This time they host Liverpool. Are you excited?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually excited because this is, what, Liverpool's first game against a top six side and one that finished above them last year and beat them quite handsomely, 4-1, in this fixture last season. So big measure of how far they've come. Obviously, you know, Liverpool did a lot of business in the transfer window. Spurs did not. Have they closed that gap?
Yeah. Tom, why did Spurs do no business in the transfer window? Was it a policy decision? Was it because of the stadium?
I think it was primarily down to the stadium. Obviously, there's been well-documented issues around the timing of that, so they probably will get some compensation back. But then again, you look at the situation that they still have to rent Wembley. You've also got, I don't know whether it's been covered on the show previously, but some season ticket holders who bought a ticket for the new stadium actually have to pay more for their seats at Wembley.
Wow.
So they have to pay an extra £3 on top of all that, which isn't really on, I don't think, from a supporter's perspective, because it's already a real pain to get out to Wembley. So it's a little bit of an issue. But yeah, that's the main reason. Financing the stadium has meant that they haven't been able to get into the market, in my eyes.
No. Jack, Liverpool looked a little bit more vulnerable against Leicester last time out, but Spurs definitely looked vulnerable when they got beaten by Watford. And issues there. Dele Alli, I think, in doubt with a thigh problem. Hugo Lloris has, well, other worries. Not coming to this fixture in the best of shapes.
Yeah, after a good start to the season, things have gone slightly off the boil for them. I agree they were very anodyne against Watford. I think the move to a back three in that one, I think they've often done that against Watford. Something about, I guess, Watford play two strikers, not a lot of teams do. Didn't really work for them because they were just outnumbered in midfield. I imagine they'll go back to a back four for this, but like you say, they will take inspiration from the 4-1 win last year. And actually, both games between these sides were really entertaining. Obviously, the Wembley game, not from a Liverpool perspective, but the other one was that 2-2 at Anfield with the two late penalties, Kane missing one and scoring one, Salah scoring in between. So I think this has got potential to be really interesting. And these games, actually, talking about Spurs, but they're interesting for Liverpool as well because they're... It's always like a natural way marker for Jurgen Klopp because his first game in charge was against Spurs. And someone did a thing this week looking at the bench Liverpool had for Jurgen Klopp's first game, and just the improvement over these 3 years has been massive. You look at, you know, Randall, Teixeira, Sinclair to the bench that Liverpool have now. And yeah, it's hard not to look at that and be impressed with the progress they've made.
Absolutely. Both teams will be having Champions League games coming up shortly afterwards. Liverpool at home to Paris Saint-Germain on Tuesday. Oof. Spurs are away at San Siro against Inter. Mm. Sellout predicted there at the Giuseppe Meazza. What awaits Tottenham?
Well, Inter, I think, have played below expectations so far this season. Insofar that there was a lot of hype around them in the summer because they did a lot of business in the transfer window. They seemed to really upgrade the team. Signed Rajan Ingelen from Roma, Stefan de Vrij from Lazio, Keita Baldigiao from Monaco. And, yeah, me included, we were tipping them to be the challengers to the Juventus. So when they lost to Sassuolo on opening night, that was a big surprise, notwithstanding their record against that team. So, look, I mean, I think it's going to be a case of can Inter get in shape for this game over this international break, because I think they're...
And what do you think? Can they? Based on what you've seen so far?
I think it's going to be tricky for them. But I think San Siro's first Champions League game with Inter in there for 6 years, I think if they can draw some kind of inspiration from that, it might help them lift their performance.
But Spurs, I mean, remember what happened last time they went?
Yeah, and also remember last time when Spurs played an Italian team.
Yeah.
Juventus, they played well for all but 15, 20 minutes of that game, which ultimately cost them. And I think that's one thing that both these sides have in common, is that they occasionally suffer blackouts where, you know, they allow their opponent into a game that they shouldn't be allowed into. So I think there's actually quite a lot in common between these two sides. They alternate between playing a back three and a back four. They're quite physical, like to play at a high intensity. But I think, just as those are Inter's kind of strengths in Serie A, I think Tottenham are stronger in those departments. Mm. So I think ultimately that will be brought to bear.
Okay, all right. Returning to this weekend, Saturday afternoon sees Chelsea host Cardiff, a meeting of two great managerial minds there, Dr. Tom, in the shape of Neil Warnock and Maurizio Sarri, who...
Very, very similar characters, all right. No, I think you look at the fixtures that Cardiff have over September and October, and I would be extremely surprised if Neil Warnock is still in a job at end of October. There was all the talk of Mourinho been the first to go, then Claude Puel and even Mark Hughes. But for me, you know, Warnock is 70 years of age. He's gone on record saying that he didn't want to manage in the Premier League again. If they're in a situation where they've got 1 point or a couple of points come October, I think Cardiff are going to be looking for a new manager.
They did give Arsenal a bit of a scare last time out. Any chance of doing something similar to Chelsea at Stamford Bridge?
Not really. Convinced. I was at Chelsea's game against Bournemouth. Mm. They weren't brilliant by any means, but they controlled the game relatively well. I think they have had more passes than anyone else in the league so far. They're lacking a little bit of cutting edge, but I imagine the chances will come against Cardiff eventually, as they did against Bournemouth.
Chelsea with a perfect record so far. They are in action in the Europa League next week, facing PAOK. You may recall PAOK's owner, Ivan Savvidis.
Oh, yeah.
Pulling out his gun last season at the end of a PAOK game against Olympiakos. He's still there, of course.
There was a girl who was in uni with me, James, who worked for AIK. And the fans actually stormed their office and they were held captive for 3 days.
What?
So that
so
was...
she was working for AIK or AIK, and AIK fans stormed the offices and held them...
Yeah, held all of the administrative staff of the club captive for 3 days.
And then what happened?
Well, there was a bit of a standoff and they let them out, but they're obviously quite passionate in Greece on these matters.
Too passionate. I'm going to say that crosses a line for me.
Do you reckon they're using AIK-47s?
Almost certainly, Jack. Almost certainly. Man City are playing Fulham. City have put 10 past Fulham in the Cottagers' last three trips to Manchester. Ooh, last time it was 5-0 at the Etihad. Do you know who scored a hat-trick?
Adebayor.
Yaya Toure.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's now gone to Greece.
He has, true. He's a home of footballing passion.
Mm.
I fear for Fulham here because they like to play football. I'm not sure if that's... I know Wolves were praised for doing that when they hosted City. Can Fulham do something similar, James?
Look, I like it when teams have a go and be courageous in these sort of situations. We've seen this sort of criticism that Rafael Benitez got for basically parking the bus and losing all of these games 2-1. At least, try and scare them. And I think...
And they are quite scary, aren't they, Fulham? They've got Seri, they've got Mitrovic.
Yeah, so I think they've got match winners in this side. And with Mitrovic... He scored more goals in England's top two tiers than any other player since his Fulham debut in
More than Aguero, for example.
Yeah, so Aguero's going to be running scared, even though Aguero scored 27 goals in 34 games against newly promoted sides. So he likes playing against your Fulhams, your Cardiffs.
Mm. In and around those newly promoted sides.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at roytheroversofficial.com.
The late game on Saturday, listener, sees Watford host Man United. Watford, who are yet to drop a single point. Earlier, Emma Saunders, that's right, the match day announcer at Vicarage Road, popped into the Tootley studio to tell us about the secret to the Hornets' amazing start to the season and the art of emceeing down at the Vicarage. Do you do that kind of Italian thing of shouting out Troy and then the crowd respond, that call and response?
Not yet.
Can you do
it's
that?
It's something I'd quite like to do. I was out in the World Cup in Russia this summer doing the same kind of job. And there, because we were up against, the other teams out there, they had their announcers doing the same job that I was doing. And it was very much, goal!
Right.
And I was trying to explain to them, we don't really do that in England. But
What do you normally do? Because I've not been to Vicarage Road.
At Watford, goal scorer for Watford. Whoever it is, number 9, Troy Deeney, with a bit of oomph. But you're right, it's nothing like what you see in Italy, in Spain. But in the World Cup, I did try and I dabbled in it a little bit because you're there.
Yeah.
But Vicarage Road, it just doesn't really sound right.
Has anyone told you can't, though?
No. It's a valid point. But the child, you are relying on the crowd to go with you. I think it might require a bit of rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and also because probably, with Watford, they don't know their names pretty much. I mean, no one's heard of most of your players. Like if you were to say, Adalberto Peñaranda.
Yeah.
You see, if you're there as the announcer,
players.
You shout out Adalberto and everyone's going to go, what?
Who?
Exactly. Is that the secret of Watford's success this year? The fact that you haven't actually made as many changes as before?
Yes, I would say... The answer to the question is when everyone's saying, what's changed? Nothing.
Right.
Nothing has changed. That is
and
the
that's the change.
That is the, yeah, exactly. That is the secret. And it was so obvious on the first day of the season when Watford played against Brighton, who had signed 558 players on deadline day, hadn't had the time to gel. Watford had. This team, by and large, well, all of them, apart from Ben Foster, were here last season, the regular starters this season. And Ben Foster's not even new. He's played for us before, so he's familiar with the surroundings of Vicarage Road. Perhaps not this team, but this isn't new to him. So that's what I would say to people. If they're shocked by Watford's start to the season, don't be. It's because they've had so much time to gel over the summer with a manager that is still there as well.
Right, OK. The defensive record's been outstanding. Who's the kind of unsung hero, though, of this Watford?
A lot of the fans would agree, Craig Cathcart.
Oh, OK.
Central defender is having a brilliant effect on Christian Cabasele, who sits next to him in that back line. He has such a calming influence across all of them. And then when you add into the mixture, Ben Foster is then behind them as well. This air of calm is hugely at the root of the success of this Watford side. And it's something that Javi Gracia also practices too. And I think last season, particularly the tail end of last season, we dropped an awful lot of points in the latter part of games. And a lot of that was sort of panic across the back line, switching off, a lack of concentration. And I think it's that air of calm in conjunction, obviously, with their fitness, which is notably better this season as well. Which is the reason you're seeing such a solid Watford side from back to front.
And a perfect start to the season, which has prompted all sorts of fanciful talk of a new Leicester and all that. But you're rather concerned about what may happen in the next couple of weeks, beginning, of course, with Man United this weekend, but then Fulham away, Spurs away in the League Cup, Arsenal away. Ooh, some tough games coming up, no?
There are, but they went into this break beating Tottenham, which we hadn't. I think the last time Watford had beaten Tottenham was 1994 prior to this, so again, Watford fans went into that fixture saying, if there's a time we're going to beat Spurs, it's going to be now. And I think they're going to do the same on Saturday. They'll go into that and think, if we're going to beat Manchester United, it's going to be now. Mm. They did beat them at Vicarage Road a couple of seasons ago. Brilliant victory that is very much the forefront of a lot of Watford fans' minds still now. And they'll be looking at the way Manchester United have started and thinking, why can't we do it again? I think that's also, there's been an obvious shift in the psychology too with Watford, in that certainly amongst the fans as well. You might look at a match like the Tottenham match, like Manchester United, and think, in inverted commas, free hit. You know, they can go for it because they've beaten the likes of Brighton, they've beaten the likes of Burnley, Crystal Palace prior to that, the teams that are in and around them as such. Hmm. They went into Tottenham and thought, we can win this. And they did. And they'll go against Man United and think, there's no reason why we can't win this either. And they'll go to Arsenal and do the same, I'm sure. So will the winning run continue? We'll have to see.
Does this game count as part of the tough run? With all due respect to Man United, they are rotten on the road, are they not?
I mean, has it not already started with Spurs?
But they sailed through that, didn't they?
Yeah, but, you know, so maybe we should look at this completely through a new prism of Watford as, you know, the new potential Leicester, you know, who are just going to swipe through this sort of supposedly difficult run. I don't think United were particularly convincing against Burnley, a Burnley side that, as we've seen, have really suffered from playing in the Europa League and have been pretty banged up and injured because of that.
Well, James Horncastle, you were the person ahead of Watford Spurs who boldly called that the Hornets would defeat the Hotspurs.
Yeah.
What is your prediction on this one?
I'm going to go for another Watford win.
No!
Yeah.
Damn, Jack, what do you think?
I think that's not beyond the realms of possibility, for sure. I think United actually have a very good record against Watford.
Do they?
I think 10 Spurs Premier before. League meetings, they've won 9.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I thought they were okay against Burnley. They had a lot of chances and were a bit wasteful. But Lukaku, I think, has started to come to the table, maybe after a slightly slow start. Looked good in the international break as well. Alexis Sanchez had the fortnight off and should be fit again. I think a draw would probably be a reasonable result for both teams, really.
Okay. Producer Ben, by the way, when Emma was in, thanks to Emma for coming by, was looking at the Watford badge and saying, hang on, they're Hornets. Why is there a moose on the badge? So he did some digging and discovered it's actually not a moose, it's a deer, because he says Hertfordshire. There you go. It was introduced in the 50s. They dropped the deer in favour of a cartoon hornet in 1974, but it was so unpopular, they dropped it and brought back the deer. Well, that's another fascinating tidbit of information. Do you have any other insignia-related insights?
What did you think of Inter Miami's new crest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like
it. The Flamingos, yeah.
Are they going to be called the Flamingos, or is there going to be another problem down the road there when they're named after a bee or something?
Oh, I don't know. They could be sponsored by Flamingoland like Hull were.
What was Flamingoland? Sorry, I missed that.
Flamingoland? You've never heard of Flamingoland?
I've not heard of Flamingoland.
It's Yorkshire's premier theme park.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I had to go there as a child, along with Eden Park.
Who did he play for?
Yeah, he's on international duty with Son.
Right.
But it's like a World War II camp. Yeah, that's my childhood.
Genuinely?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. FC Internacional de Miami or whatever, they don't have a stadium yet.
No, but it's work in progress. But the way MLS franchise values are going now, they're actually costing more than Premier League clubs.
Really?
Yeah.
So that was a very smart move by Mr. and Mrs. Beckham.
He's done a good deal there, yeah.
All right. Okay. Now, there's one other team in the Premier League with a perfect start, and it is, of course, West Ham. Not a single point blemishing their record so far. They'll be attempting to defend that clean sheet away at Goodison on Sunday in a match rich with memories for both clubs, Everton and West Ham, the David Moyes years, the Big Sam weeks. So many shared memories. What do you think? We talked about Richarlison. Is he back from suspension now?
I think he's got one more.
Has he still got one more?
I think so.
But despite that, do you fancy Everton, Jack?
I don't know how good Everton are, actually. They're really they're a bit of a conundrum to me at the moment. They've looked to be quite good going forward. Defence still needs a bit of sorting out. I think it'll be interesting when Kurt Zouma played last time, but when Yerry Mina comes in, I'm sure the defence will have a slightly different look to it. I think there are green shoots there for sure, and when Richarlison is back, I think him and Walcott on either wing will be interesting. Bernard, of course, yet to make his debut.
Right.
I think Walcott might still be injured for this one as well, so they will be a bit short here.
I think they suffered some casualties in the international break because, as you mentioned, Walcott's out injured. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who'd been coming in for, I think, Richarlison, picks up a knock as well. And you know, they've still got loads of casualties at the back. So West Ham, I'm not saying they're going to get something out of this, but yeah, you know, it's certainly a depleted Everton side.
All right, four defeats from four for the Hammers. And the next three games are all at home. Chelsea, Macclesfield and Man United, so that's a run. They don't own their stadium, of course, Dr. Tom. If things were to turn bad for them, how much trouble would they be in financially?
I think they'd be in a lot of trouble, and obviously trying to find a ground share with Leighton Orient or the likes. So, but no, I don't think that's necessarily on the cards. LLDC, who looked after the development and the legacy for the stadium, they don't really have any other options. So I know there have been some public mudslinging matches, but I think everything will work out there.
Okay. Well, on the field, meantime, they are bottom of the table and visiting a Toffees side that beat them 3-0 and 4-1 last season. Here's a question. Who scored the hat-trick in the Wood at Goodison?
Wazza.
You're absolutely right. DC United's Wazza. Excellent. Wolves taking on Burnley. That's Sunday, 1:30. Could be a busy afternoon, that, for Joe Hart. Burnley 19th, but now safely out of the Europa League, so able to focus their thoughts on their domestic campaign, the Clarets. But Wolves, eh? Dr. Tom, are they going to be top four contenders the way they're going?
I wouldn't say top four contenders, but
six?
They could potentially get into Europe if the team plays the way it continues to play, and with the potential for January signings as well. So
a lot of people have been wondering whether now their players are going to be ripe for plucking by bigger clubs. But do you think Wolves have the wherewithal and the will to hang on to them?
I don't think that necessarily matters, because you look a little bit like Watford's model, where you're signing Richarlison for 11 million and selling him for 50-odd with add-ons. I don't think Wolves would have an issue in that. They have a conveyor belt of talent. They'll be able to sell players for massive, massive money. The interesting thing is, you look at the strategy that Burnley had with the Europa League, and you look at that second team that they put out for the home leg against Olympiacos. they didn't want to be in the Europa League. They just wanted to stay in the Premier League and continue to pick up their £100 million plus check. Mm. And that's the same situation, sadly, from a supporters' perspective, that's happening with, you know, the Carabao Cup, the FA Cup. The Premier League and staying,
yeah, exactly.
It is staying in the Premier League is so vitally important to these sort of, let's just say, bottom 13, 14 clubs that they'll sacrifice all the other competitions just to stay there.
Sounds like the time is ripe to introduce another cup competition across Europe.
Mm.
As indeed UEFA, Jack, were announcing this week.
Yes, I don't think any details have emerged, but I think it's. I guess it's leaning towards the stratification of European teams, thinking that, you know, the main one, the Champions League, or whatever it's called in the future, people want to see, you know, maybe the sixth best English team against the fifth best Spanish team, rather than, you know, Bate Borisov, team right. like that. And so I guess those
So you've got the
teams.
Champions League and then the Europa League. And a lot of people got excited about this, thinking it'd be the return of the Cup Winners' Cup, which we haven't seen since when? The kind of early noughties? When did the Cup Winners'
Lazio
Cup
Lazio were the last team to win it, I think.
Oh, were they? In 98, yeah. Was that?
Yeah, that was 99, James. Yeah.
At Villa Park?
Mm.
Wow. Okay, a lot of people excited, as I say, by that notion. But the reality is what? Probably that this will be a competition that the beaten Europa League group sides can drop into. Is that right, Dr. Tom?
Well, I think what UEFA are trying to achieve, and they've done this on the international front with the Nations League, and they've done it with the other competitions. They're trying to fan out the fixtures to have as many televised games as possible. And we've seen even the nights where you've got two games live. So that's what they're trying to create, is actually a competition where it will add to the televised games and will mean that we'll have almost saturated coverage of all of these games, and ultimately it generates more money from a broadcasting perspective.
Yeah, right. that dreadful Thursday-Sunday schedule fixture congestion is now going to become, what, Friday, Monday? It's just going to get even worse.
It's going to get crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Mornings. Yeah. The great untapped market.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're moving in that direction. Of course, the Goal Show returning next week with Champions League, and mm-hmm. we'll now incorporate the new look Champions League afternoon fixtures.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, I agree with Jack. I think this is, again, just moving towards a European Super League in all but name. Insofar as, you know, let's give the smaller nations another competition that they can be happy with, and we can say we're democratizing the game, when in actual fact all we're doing is getting more games featuring more of the big teams.
I see.
Did you see the Agnelli comments about obviously having a Champions League final in New York after 2021?
Yeah, and he's also advocated playing Champions League games on a weekend as well. So, and moving club games to a sort of Tuesday, Wednesday sort of way. So, as head of the European Clubs Association, yeah, he's certainly driving this.
Right. Nothing is sacred.
No.
Nothing.
No.
Not even the World Cup.
Yeah. Wow, that's so true. That's so true. Let's just take solace then in more of the exciting games coming up this weekend. For example, Bournemouth-Leicester, which sees Jamie Vardy back from suspension. So that's nice. That should be a good game, that. Huddersfield against Palace, very much down the wrong end of the table. Greaves says, is Huddersfield versus Palace this Saturday already a potential relegation six-pointer? Palace, of course, on 3 points so far. Tipped by Julien Laurent, controversially, to be going down this year. It's a big game, that, isn't it?
Yes, I guess it much will turn on whether Wilfried Zaha is back.
Good news is that he's back in training, but he won't be involved in this. The good news...
Is that good news?
Yeah, well, it's good news that he's back in training. Oh. More good news for Palace is Benteke's fitness. He's not. So
Benteke, who missed 4 big chances in the 2-0 defeat to Southampton on match day 4.
Right.
Four.
What's his XG then? 4, is it?
Yeah.
Is that right? Am I doing this right?
I think that's good.
Yeah, good. Excellent. Agreev was also asking, what are the chances of another 4-4 between Newcastle and Arsenal? Because that fixture's rolling around again this weekend. Arsenal were 4-0 up at the break.
The most
but
dangerous
scoreline.
But ended
up drawing 4-4. 2011, this game. Cech Tiote there. Well, did he have a hat-trick or something? He certainly finished the...
He scored the last goal.
He did score the last goal. 3 minutes from time. Joey Barton got a brace, 2 penalties. Leon Best also scored. Wow.
Wow. Extraordinary. Anyway, what are the chances of that happening again this time around? Big, I'd say, no?
Absolutely. The way Arsenal are defending and the fact that Newcastle have some reasonable attacking players, I think we could see a lot of goals. Like no other team, you mentioned Cardiff earlier on. I don't think Cardiff will be scoring two goals against many teams this season. So I could see that game being a wash with goals.
But just run the Newcastle attacking options by me again.
Solomon Rondon.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yoshinori Muto.
Okay.
Hozelu,
yep.
Hozelu.
Ayoze Perez.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And some people who score from midfield as well. Kennedy when he's on a good day.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think, James? Oh, Oracle?
I fancy Newcastle for this one.
You do?
Yeah, just because I think, you know, Arsenal's still a bit leaky. So you know, I think this if Cardiff can get two past them, I think Newcastle, you know, probably 5-6.
Right. Yeah. Dr. Tom, just a quick update on the Newcastle ownership situation. Is there any sign of a new bid after that other one that seems so promising that just evaporated?
There's still interest behind the scenes, but this really isn't a good time to be buying a football club. If you want to buy a club, you want to be ready to press the button when the club is safe, if it's the Premier League club. So you're probably talking April, come in, put your stamp on it, be able to spend in the summer when the market isn't as inflated. With Newcastle, though, it's such a good opportunity. It's probably the only one that could really break into the top six. The club is going to make 50 million quid in this financial year. So, like, it makes sense across the board. Like, if someone was going to give me a share of an MLS club or a share in Newcastle, I'd take a share in Newcastle.
Would you? Really? Okay, so why is nobody doing it?
I'm not really sure, James. I think we've had a situation that there's a little bit of a vacuum, that we had quite a lot of people. There was an arms race for Chinese buyers to come in. That then, obviously, systematically, that was stopped. That created inflation in the market. So I think a few people thought that their assets were worth more than they actually were. But there's definitely interests from the US in Premier League and lower league English clubs, because you look at the riches and the wealth that's there to be generated, and there's people lending in football again. So, you know, I think it's a fantastic opportunity, and I'm genuinely surprised that a deal hasn't been done yet.
Well, that's the fixture list this weekend. But as a very special treat for you, listener, coming up after this, we'll be sticking around to spin some of you, the listeners, favourite footballing tunes. Mozzarella, mortadella, Nutella, Luca, sei per me.
Numero uno. Stand by for action.
Yes, listener, you're right. It is Matze Knopf with Numero Uno, the German artiste. A celebration of the enormous talent of Luca Toni, who at the time was playing for Bayern Munich. And playing that, I mean, as if we need a reason. Because James Townsend asks a question that's not really related to it, now that I look at it again. James Townsend says, what do you think about the news that former Southampton and Italy striker Dani Osvaldo says he gave up football to become a singer in a band because he likes to be free? I think it's good news because I want people to be free, and I like it when footballers make music or people make music about football. Who doesn't? Hey, yeah. Dr. Tom. Diamond Lights, Head Over Heels by Kevin Keegan. Hey, Outstanding by Andrew Cole. What's your favourite football-related music track?
Probably Bad Boys by Edmundo and Romario.
Damn, that sounds amazing. Well, I see a point there. I asked actually today on Twitter what people's favourites, you know, records actually recorded about footballers, but commercially released. I was astonished. Olli Juliusson recommends Hooterman by France. Have you heard that, Jack?
Nope.
You're just about to.
I'm a big fan of this song by Yuri Djorkaeff.
Okay, Yuri Djorkaeff made a song himself.
Yeah, Dans ta lumière, Live in Your Light.
Yeah. That's remarkable. Yeah, that's Yuri Djurkaeff.
Yeah, and the video is quite something as well. I think it's kind of peak George Michael, kind of fast love. It's kind of that kind of thing.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
On the rap tip.
Yes.
As I believe the youth say, the Ronaldo rap by Brazilian rapper Marcelo de Deutsch.
About O Phenomenal.
Yeah, it's called okay. I'm Ronaldo. Sou Ronaldo. A minha fome é de bola, minha sede é de gol, a lança rede, eu sou Ronaldo. Sou de sua minha camisa, conquista minha divisa, eu já provei que eu sou Ronaldo. A
couple of others we should make a shout out to, the very unreggae-ish, from Raphael Honigstein. And she wasn't by him, it's by, I think, was it Alan and Denise? Sexy Knees, as he puts it, the song's actually called Rummenigge Rummenigge. Check this out. There's a football player with sexy knees. With sexy knees. With sexy knees. Talking about a man with sexy knees. Yep, recorded in 1983 and still sounding as fresh as a daisy. Magnificent. But anyway, so many great bits of music. We could be here all day at Jazz FM. But for me, the winner is a magnificent piece from Newport's very own Goldie Looking Chain and their tribute to Tony Pulis. Tony Pulis, one hell of a bloke. Tony Pulis, he manages Stoke. Tony Pulis, not from Brazil. He's from the port and he was born in Pell. Tony played football in defence, but now his playing career is in the past tense. He started playing football back in the day for Newport YMCA. His professional football career began. He played for loads of clubs like Gillingham, Newport County, Bournemouth too, and Bristol Rovers, just to name a few. Tony is a man of great ambition, hung up his boots, got a managerial position. With his initials on his tracksuit, he taught the team how to... All right, over to producer Ben with Paddy Power.
Thanks, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you, Ben?
Yep, good as gold, thank you, Lee. Let's get stuck in, because it's the return of the Premier League, and the big one, or one of the big ones, is Liverpool v Spurs. Liverpool undefeated, Spurs coming into this off a defeat. Give us the overall for this one, and I have a feeling that Mane might be the first goal scorer.
Interesting. Very tight at the odds here. Spurs are 17-10. Liverpool the slight favourites, despite being away from home, at 7-5, and the draw is 5-2. In the betting industry, we call this sitting on the fence in terms of the pricing. Mane to score first, though, 5-1. No fence sitting there. Decent value, I think.
And you've got a money back special on this one as well, Lee.
Yeah, money back as a free bet if the beleaguered Harry Kane scores. That's selected markets only, pre-match singles, max bet £10. T&Cs apply, but he looks knackered.
Let's talk about Watford then, Lee. They are hosting Man United in the late game on Saturday. We've heard from Emma Saunders already in the show about the Hornets' winning start. Can their winning run continue here?
We think the international break came at just the wrong time for the Hornets, actually. United, despite everything, are odds-on favourites for us. They're 5-6. Watford, the chunky 10-3, and the draw's 12-5. If you do fancy Watford, that's a good price, but maybe their run's coming to an end.
Other end of the table, West Ham. Still got no points at all. They're going to be at Everton, who beat them twice last season, and quite handsomely. But can West Ham get a point out of this one?
We think not. We think they're going to get beaten again by Everton. Everton are even money favourites for this. West Ham 5-2 to win this game, and the draw is 12-5.
And finally, let's talk about Arsenal versus Newcastle. Arsenal not so bad going forward. Shambolic in defence. Cardiff scored twice against them. Can Newcastle do the same?
Well, they can, but it depends if they get any of their men outside their own box or not. We make it 9-5. That Newcastle score two or more goals against Arsenal, but Arsenal remain the odds-on favourites for this one. They're 5-6. Newcastle, yet again, a long price to win at home, 3-1.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And, of course, when the fun stops, stop. And that's very much the operative word for this edition of the Totally Football Show. Many thanks to James Horncastle, to Jack Lang.
Pleasure.
Dr. Tom, always would like to have you on board.
Great to see you.
We're back on Monday. Listener, do enjoy yourselves over the weekend, and we'll catch up with you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show.
Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really, and here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK, so that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5pm till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.